Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We will get back to crab cakes and beer shortly. All of it, of course, brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Love my windows from Window Nation. I'm looking out the windows here in the studio. Just fantastic. Big appreciation to our friends there. 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. And, of course, Goodwill. The new website featuring Lisa Rosiniak and all things Halloween. On the eve of October baseball, and we don't play that around here lately, but we do watch. And we did as a child. And, you know, I've been doing this 31 years. I have all sorts of videos, thousands of videos up. Some people say, you got 5 views on that one and 10,000 on that one. Why? I don't know. All I know is when YouTube came to life in 06 and 07 and 08, I carried a video camera most places at that time and wound up doing like the beginning of a book back in 2008. I thought about Baltimore leadership and how many leaders and people. I mean, Barry Trotz texted me yesterday. He coached the Baltimore Skipjacks. I ran into Gary Williams last week. He coached the Maryland Terps. You know, Mark Duffner is still on my Facebook page. So I was thinking all these great leaders back in 08 and the Tree of the Ravens, and a lot of people still alive then, Don Shula, Schnellenberger, and folks. And I reached to Earl Weaver, who was always cantankerous. And knew me a little bit, but not a lot. I didn't know Earl well, but certainly well enough to get a sit down with him, I guess, at the end of his life. And as serendipity would have it, Earl agreed to do this the week that the statues were put out in the outfield at Camden Yards. And Dick Gordon, who was Earl's agent, was also Luis Aparicio's agent. And I knew Dick very well, the late, great Dick Gordon. He was very, very good to me over 30 years and connected me to my cousin whenever I needed. But more than that, it was involved with a lot of baseball players. So Dick calls me. He's like, hey, Nestor, I got Earl for you. I got Earl. We're going to be at the Harbor Court. You want to come downstairs? And I'm like, yeah. I said to my wife, will you hold the camera? Literally, it was it. Will you hold the Canon Sure Shot Elf camera that we shoot video on that we put up on the YouTube? Because it looked good then. You know, it was like 2008, 9, whatever the hell that was. I don't know. So we met Earl down on the second floor with Dick Gordon. My wife was there. And Earl's like, I got 10 minutes for you. I got 10. You know, Earl's always salty. And he wound up sitting there for a good long time. And I think there's more video than even what I put up on YouTube. But a man named John Miller wrote to Luke Jones 2 weeks ago, who then wrote to me and said, I think this one's for you, Ness. So John Miller wrote to me and said he's doing a little life project on the late, great. It's weird to say late, great Earl Weaver because he always feels alive in spirit when he's kicking dust up on Haller and MFing him. And you're here for one reason. John Miller, you're here for one reason. I don't even know what it is, man. Welcome on to the program. It is a pleasure to have you aboard. I'm going to let you tell everyone about your journalism and Wall Street Journal and all that. But you reached to me because apparently I have rare footage of Earl talking about being a leader and talking about being a manager, because that's really the reason I sat down with him. This was a book I wanted to do on leadership.
It was a remarkable interview, Nestor. Thanks for that great introduction. I emailed you or tried to email you through Luke because I thought it was one of the best interviews of a really famous person that I'd ever seen, frankly. I covered.
Well, you're like a journalist. You're going to make me cry. Don't do that.
I covered CEOs and presidents for the Wall Street Journal for 13 years before I quit to make a film called Moundsville, which is on PBS, and to do other projects, including this, which is going to be a book about Earl Weaver. And I played baseball in college in Maryland at Mount St. Mary's. I did a lot with baseball. I worked briefly as a scout.
Did you eat French fries in the cafeteria with Jim Phelan at any point in your life?
Yes.
Absolutely. See, you know, everybody did, didn't they?
My idea for this book was that, Earl gets mentioned all the time as like the prophet of analytics and Moneyball before Moneyball. But, you know, nothing's been written in 40 years. There was a book by Terry Pluto in the early 80s. There was his own autobiography. And nobody ever really gets at, you know, what really made him great. Like, was it the math? Was it his use of radar guns before anybody else? And I think the truth is a more human story. And I think it has to do with something that you brought out of him in your interview, where he said, you know, I failed at baseball for a long time. I was trying to be a major league player. That's what I wanted. And I didn't get that. But in that failure and in that pain, he saw what it took to be a great major league baseball player. And he applied that analysis and that, you know, gift for talent evaluation that he got through failing, he applied that to managing. And
did you even hear him saying to Palmer, I wasn't good enough to do this, God damn it. You're good enough to go out there and do it.
He would lose his stuff. I don't know if we can say the seven words here, but he would lose his stuff if you didn't play well enough. And that's what made him great. He wasn't going to tolerate people who weren't good. And he knew what good meant, and he knew how baseball worked. And I feel like your interview, because he talks about the Cardinal system and all this stuff, like you brought out of him stuff I had not heard him say so bluntly, and which kind of confirmed my hypothesis, which is that this is a human story about a guy failing and figuring it out, and then getting after it. And in a very kind of
you are gritty, a storyteller, aren't you, John? Huh?
In a very gritty, inspirational way. And so I feel like that's the story of Earl Weaver that nobody has told yet, and that's what I want to do with my book.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on, man. The original reach was you to me to interview me for your book. I would just say to you that, first off, Earl's a legend, right? I mean, and Earl was all I knew as a kid. So, I mean, I was born in 68, so I started going to the ballpark in 73. Louie was a Red Sox. I have a picture, chapter two of my book, of me and Louie at the ballpark getting a ball that I still have. Rico Petrocelli on there, Orlando Cepeda, Louis Tiant, Yaz, all that, right? No Lynn and Rice yet. No Burleson yet or Benitez yet. They sort of replaced Aparicio at that point. But nonetheless, baseball all my life, all of the 70s was Earl. Like at the ballpark, my dad, Boog Powell, Lee May, Eddie Murray, Mark Belanger, like my dad and I went to, 15 or 20 games a year, 75, 76, 77, 78. And in 79, I was 11. And that was the year they caught fire week. I went to 41 games that year. And I've told this story and I'll die on this story. I went to 31 games in a row at home in the summer of 79 before they lost. They lost to Steve Trout on a 6-hit shutout. I've talked to Steve Trout about it. He might have beaten Flanagan that night. I'm not sure. But it was 79, and I had gone to 31 straight games. My dad went to a game in May that I didn't go to, and it rained, and they lost to the Brewers. Right. My dad picked up a loss or two, but I picked nights only when they won in 79.
You had a 30-game winning streak.
31.
I don't believe it.
It is factual. I only went on the nights they won, and they won a lot. In the summer of 79, my dad would say, we're going to win or lose. And I'm like, I don't feel good about the matchup tonight, Dad. We would stay home, So Earl was my furniture, my
home. That sounds like magic, Nestor.
Something mad. I was there tonight to since they hit the home run. Don't play me, John. Come on now. So, my childhood out there and seeing Earl kick dirt and rip up the rule book and be a part of the theater and be cantankerous. He's the only manager I knew, right? Then I start working at the paper. He left for Out the Belly and then came back. It didn't go well, but I was working at the paper when all that was going on. And then later in life, 5 years later, I'm on the radio. They spring train down in Fort Lauderdale. Sometimes he would be there when I was there, and he'd say hello, and he'd sit down, and I have pictures of him sitting next to me. But he was never, happy to be sitting and talking to anybody. Phil Jackman covered him, and Phil was like a father to me back in the 70s. And Phil is having some later in life issues right now. Love Phil. I mean, I'll cry if I talk about Phil. But Phil and his daughters and family would vacation down in Florida for 6 weeks covering spring training in Miami. And Michelle Jackman and Susan, they have the greatest Earl Weaver stories, from being a part of that as kids. But the people that covered him, I touched elbows with every reporter, Richard Justice and Buster Olney and Rosenthal, all those guys. I worked with those guys, and they were up on Earl every night. So Earl went from like a legend to me as a kid to like a real guy, and a real guy that I didn't want to poke him. You know what I mean? Because I didn't want him to come over and be a jerk to me. You know what I mean? Like, I want him to like me, and I would always lead with Aparicio and whatever. And he was always good on the air with me, and probably better than, because I was a little wacky, when I was younger. I find it hard to believe. But when he sat with me that day, he was just such a little man. And my wife didn't know much of the legend. She's from New Hampshire, and she knew who he was. And, she had seen the video. We watched that video for comedy. Anytime we're having a rough day, we put that video on. It always lightens the load. But sitting with him that day, I was literally trying to do this leadership thing. So I was very specific in what I was asking about, and he loved talking about it. Like, that was the wild part. The wild part was I didn't get angry, you know, don't ask me that question. Why are you asking me that? I got more of like introspection than I even thought I was. I mean, I appreciate you complimenting me, but we were literally sitting in a lobby. We weren't even in a private place. We were like in an atrium. Sound wasn't very good, you know, but I've never really thought much about that part of it, or that somebody like you would find him. But certainly the chain of Moneyball back to note cards and math and new math and applying that, that has not been explored. So congratulations on your part for taking that on, you know.
And using on base average, I think one of his first moves was to put Don Buford in a leadoff spot because he had a high on base average. And there was a kind of King Lear-esque humility to Earl in that interview, which, again, I really appreciated. And one thing I explored too, Nestor, I wonder if you have thoughts about this, is that, you know, in the 1970s, managers were American cultural archetypes and icons who transcended baseball. I mean, Billy Martin, Earl Weaver, Tommy Lasorda,
were Archie Bunker, but for real in baseball, right? Like they drank beer. They were old school leaders. They were my way or the highway. We had Frank Cush here.
And they ran the show, and they didn't take orders from general managers. They managed the way they wanted to. And you hired them because you wanted their magic, their intuitions. And in the 80s, you know, the math came in and analytics started coming in. And now the managers are their push button corporate functionaries, like they're apparatchiks of the system. And they take orders from GMs and they don't make decisions anymore. And Earl was sort of the king of managers at a time when managers were king. And that's part of my story, too.
Well, every time I read about Johnny Unitas, he was like the offensive coordinator too, right? Like, you know, out on the, in that era, you know, that's kind of the way it worked. Now they are, they're all game managers unless they're calling audibles at the line of scrimmage, which are still audibles that are brought in from management to say, this is the play we're going to run right here. And that's what coach wants done. And like down the line, John Miller, the other John Miller, by the way, I found the pictures of that John Miller that was thrown out of here. Years ago, sitting with me in my office. So I'm going to put those up. But this is J-O-H-N Miller, and not the relief pitcher from the 66 Orioles either, who I've also had on the program. We got a lot of John Millers. Imagine that. Give your background a little bit and tell me more about your project and what you're doing with Earl and how far along are, because you sort of discovered this video to reach to me. I wish I had more clarity and color for you on Earl. I probably have a couple of old conversations, but they're probably just B-ish, you know what I mean? Like from the late 90s where he's talking about Davey's doing a good job out there. And, you know, Palmeiro's good. He's a great ball player. Reminds me of, you know, like nothing you're going to want it, but that's going to be deeper and darker into the Zen of Earl Weaver. You should use that. That's stolen right from Bobby V, but it's pretty good. The Zen of Earl Weaver.
So my background, my mom's from Catonsville. And she moved to Belgium with my dad in the 70s. My joke is they fled the terror of the Ford administration. The joke being that Ford was
good
so
beer bland. And great waffles.
Ford was so bland. Now, yeah, beer and waffles and fries. And they dropped an anchor there. So I grew up in Belgium with family in Baltimore and going to Orioles games in the summer. And, you know, Belgium rains a lot. America in the summer is a lot sunnier. And so I just fell in love with the Orioles and with baseball. And I'd have relatives who would audio tape WBAL broadcasts with John Miller and mail them to me. And so I would listen to these broadcasts on a tape deck over and over again to John Miller. And I can still repeat verbatim some words from the 88 season, for example. Mm. Like when they won their first game after 21 straight losses, they played the national anthem and John Miller said, "Yes, America is beautiful even when you're 0-21.
Comiskey Park, man. I remember that one.
And so I listened to those games and just fell in love with the Orioles and embarked on a career. So I went to Mount St. Mary's, played baseball, went back to Belgium, got hired by the Wall Street Journal, covered global trade, covered global mining, went to over 40 countries, had a really good experience.
See, that's where I want to have you on, talking about what's going on in China. This is what we need. Yeah, next time around, I'm interviewing you.
So moved to Pittsburgh for the Journal to cover mining all over the world again, and in West Virginia, coal mining. Mm. And then had a midlife crisis and kind of burned out and quit after 2016. I did a movie called Moundsville for PBS, and then I wanted to do other
Moundsville.
It's on the Ohio River. It's a town in West Virginia. And my idea was to profile a town in the Rust Belt that was heavily Trump supporting, but not talk about Trump. So take the politics out of it. Who are these people? What do they want? What's their story? And really take the divisiveness and the bitterness, the politics out of it, and just profile the people. So that was my idea. And the movie's done well. It's on PBS. It was reviewed in The Atlantic. And so then I was looking for other projects. And I've had this lifelong fascination with Earl Weaver and just started poking around. So I've talked to the family. I've spent time with Mike Weaver down in Florida. I've talked to his widow, Marianne. I've spent time with Kim Benson. We had lunch actually in Baltimore about a month ago in Howard County. And so, yeah, I have a lot of stuff, and I'm negotiating now with agents and publishers. I haven't finalized the deal yet, but it's going to get done. I have, 40 pages written, and I'm just plugging along. And so I've been looking for any material I can get. And I found some really cool stuff. Somebody sent me a PDF of The Oriole Way, which is the famous guidebook to how the Orioles should play baseball. I have the interviews with the family. I have, just archival stuff that nobody's done before.
I've never seen the Oriole Way book. I'd love to see that.
I can send that to you. And then, Earl Weaver played this important role in the history of video games, believe it or not. So EA Sports famously made John Madden Football, and that revolutionized video games and sports video games. But before they made John Madden Football, they made a game called Earl Weaver Baseball. And that was the first ever season-length sports simulation in any sport. And to do that, they flew Earl out to Silicon Valley and they had him whiteboard baseball. So as he was, taking breaks for his cigarettes, he would explain how baseball worked to these guys, these tech guys in Silicon Valley. And so I talked to the people who made the game, and that's never been reported. It was how he went out there and tried to tell these guys how baseball worked. And so I have some original stuff in the book that people will really enjoy, I think.
My bus trips, John, we sometimes would put game 5 of the 83 World Series on, and he's in the booth with right. Cosell and kind of pissed off, but kind of yeah. happy and doesn't know how to act. And Altobelli's about to win and Cosell's just ribbing him. Like Cosell's into him. About sixth or seventh inning. I'm here with Earl Weaver. Earl, tell me how it feels to witness this happen without you. John Miller's doing a book and a sort of a whole treatment on Earl. What would you say that this is about? Is this about his mind for analytics or what would become analytics?
So I would say there's some of that, but I feel like that's been addressed a lot. Like if you read Moneyball, there's a whole page on Earl Weaver. You read anything about statistics, like his role in that revolution is unequivocal and very clear. So I feel like I'll make that case and I'll sort of flesh it out a little bit and talk about what he actually did. But that
what
story.
What was Ralph Houk doing in the 70s? What was, Bobby Vert? I mean, like these other managers, how were they managing? That would be the interesting thing for me. How's Walter Alston doing this differently or Tommy Lasorda? Because his contemporaries, Chuck Tanner, I'm just throwing names out, right? Like all of those people that were there, they were all doing the same game, right? I mean, were the Orioles really doing this differently?
They were. For one, they would often bat people who were really fast with low on base averages. Like you'd have a guy hitting, 290 with a 310 on base average and 50 stolen bases batting leadoff. And Earl didn't do that. Earl, like, Kenny Singleton drew a lot of walks. He batted high in the order. He understood the value of the walk. So that's one. Another one is that he was really willing to innovate and change his mind. The Orioles actually bunted a lot in the early 70s because they had Belanger and they had the pitchers batting until the DH. And when those great Oriole teams, everybody left. So Frank Robinson left, Bobby Gritch left. The guys who were there in the early 70s left. He had to reinvent the team. And so the team that you saw in the late 70s, that was a team where it was his guys and he stopped bunting. Like they bunted way below league average. So he was willing to adapt. And I think that is part of the leadership stuff that does make him different was that he didn't have the arrogance to say, I figured out baseball. His book is called It's What You Know After You've Learned It All. It's what you learn after you know it all that counts. And that's what he believed, that you could always adapt. You could always, learn something else. And so that adaptability is part of the secret recipe. And he, used radar guns when those came in. He used video. He had his guys use video. He had the stat cards where he had matchups and used the data. And other managers weren't doing that. They really were managing on gut. They were managing on, eyeball tests. And so in all those
You can't say managing gut in a week that John Harbaugh, you know, didn't kick the field goal around here. Right.
I thought, did he go for two again? I thought that was the narrative.
No, the narrative was it's longer and more complicated than that. John, when do you, on this project, I mean, are you talking to Ken Singleton? Are you talking to Jim Palmer? Or are you?
I will. I haven't talked to those guys yet. I want to sell the book and have a deal and have a deadline first and not waste their time. So when I sell the book, do the deal, which should be in the next few months, then I've talked to Bill Stetka, the Orioles alumni guy, and we're gonna set all those interviews up. So it is gonna happen. But you know, those guys, they are already on the record talking about Earl. So I'm not convinced I'll get a lot of new stuff out of them. So the more I can report before and bring them new stuff, that will incentivize them to share with me stuff they haven't shared before, I think.
John Eisenberg's storytelling books, unbelievably good resource. Certainly Terry Pluto's Alive and Well. And Terry and I, you can archive on YouTube. He and I have discussed Earl Weaver plenty in our conversations with Browns and this and all the godforsaken stuff that the Browns have been through the last 20 years. But I've known Terry forever as well. By the way, a free plug for Terry. If you haven't read his ABA book, maybe top five all time book ever written, Loose Balls. So go get that. And, you know, and while we're on baseball books, get Mike Shropshire's book, Seasons in Hell,
Life with the
Texas Rangers. That to me, that's, I mean, Lords of the Realm is still the gold standard for the industry. But as far as entertaining books and, you know, Bronx Zoo type stuff, Seasons in Hell is my. So, I, you know, if authors out here, I want to plug great, great books that are timeless, ageless. And usually if it's a book, it has to have comedy. If it doesn't have some comedy, it's hard for me. You know,
Earl Weaver's hilarious. He gave press conferences naked, munching on fried chicken. And, you know, when I went to Orioles archives,
I've only seen Sparky Anderson naked munching on food. I've never seen, I have seen Sparky do that. I did, but not Earl. Nope, not Earl.
When I went to the Orioles archives, Mike Gibbons, one of the first things he pulled out was this uniform with the little pocket for the cigarettes inside. It was where Earl had his smokes.
I love Mike. All right, man, look. Sounds like we're at the beginning of a beautiful run for you and getting this project done. If I can help you, I mean, I don't know what I'm going to help you. I mean,
all right.
But if I have more footage from that day that I'm unaware of, I'll let you know. Cause I might, cause Earl was really like into it. You know, even my wife, her arm was getting tired. She's like, he said 10 minutes. And it's like, no, man, he's rolling. He's into Elmira now. You know, the Browns are leaving St. Louis. Stop everything. You know, hey, man, I appreciate it. And let's stay in touch.
How can folks
find you if they have some Earl Weaver, if they see this, hear this and like, hey, I got an Earl. How do they find you?
You can go to my website, johnwmiller.org, or email me at jmjournalist@gmail.com.
Journalists, a rare breed, are we not? You've been thrown out of anything lately, John?
Yeah, I think I have. Let me
think. Good, good. You're not living right if you're a journalist. these idiots say the Orioles and the Ravens threw you out. What's wrong with you? Oh no, that means everything's right with me, probably. You know, at this
forgiveness
point.
Forgiveness, not permission, Nestor.
Next time we get together, we're going to talk about clean coal.
Sounds good.
John Miller's here. Not that John Miller or that. This John Miller, the guy from the Wall Street Journal, doing a little Earl Weaver biopic before it's all over with. And I can only imagine Jim Palmer saying, you're studying Earl. What's wrong with you? I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking great old stories and wise conversations at BaltimorePositive.com.